Welcome to
Urban Planning is Not Boring. I'm Sam.
And I'm Nat.
Hi.
Hello.
And welcome.
It's been a while since it's just been us.
I know. Honestly, me and Sam were talking about how we've just been having so many guests and we really needed you guys to just hear us for once.
Yeah, I feel like we just need to decompress. Yeah. And this is the perfect forum where we can do that.
I totally agree. Sam and I are finishing up spring break on this lovely Sunday afternoon. And we just wanted to talk to you guys about our capstone project for USC's grad program. So the capstone is essentially the assignment that qualifies us to graduate, essentially. It's our required course. We take it for the entire semester at the very end of the program. And there are two main components of the assignment. And you get graded based on those two components. And then you're done. Mm-hmm. And you're walking the stage. And Sam and I are 1 month away from graduating.
I know. Actually,
a little bit over a month, but very close to 1 month.
Well, no. We have 2 months till we graduate because we don't graduate till May, but we'll be done with school in about a little bit more than a month.
Exactly.
And then it's just, we chill.
Yes.
I already got all my graduation stuff, like my cap and gown. Yeah. I know, it came so fast. I had my sash on today just to try it on, and it's so cute.
Yep.
That stuff is really expensive, but you know, like it's crazy because you only like rent most of the stuff except the sash, and it's like, oh, I have to pay $90 to rent this and then send it back. But
not just that, like my parents were telling me like, oh, we're so excited to like take pictures with you after graduation, like after you walk the stage when you, you know, are going to be in your like whole robe. Cause like for the master's program, like you don't just have like your robe. It's like this big, like sash thing. It's gorgeous and beautiful. And then I remember when we were buying it, the lady was like, oh, right after you walk, there's going to be a bin next to the stage and you just take it all off and you plop
it in. What? I don't think so.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, because we got ours via mail. So it said, I have a return label in my box.
So the lady said like when we were buying our robes, she was like, yeah, at graduation, there's a bin and you just put all your stuff in the bin.
I'm not doing that.
I know. I told my dad, he was like, uh-uh. He was like, if you have to pay a fee, it doesn't matter. Cause I want to take pictures with you in the robe.
Yeah. Well, that's dumb. I feel like that's really dumb. I'm just going to mail it back because it's my money. It's not that I didn't pay. Yeah, I did.
I did not get a return label in my package.
Are you sure in your box? I would check.
I don't have the box anymore.
Oh.
Box is gone, but it was empty. Like, I checked, but there wasn't anything in there. So I'm
okay, well, we can resolve this later.
Yeah.
Anyway, the burnout is real. Like, not wanting to go back to school and finish anything after spring break.
Kind of forgot that we were having a podcast right now. I thought I was just talking to you. Anyways, so back to capstone. Sam, do you want to kind of describe the elements of our capstone or the process of the capstone course?
Sure. So as you all know, in our program that we are all split up into concentrations. And so Natalie is like housing and real estate development. I'm environmental planning / planning for climate change. And then there's design and economic development, transportation, and arts and culture. And so every person basically has an assignment to evaluate their, like the site that we were given, which we can dive into after this, from your concentrations lens, which is an interesting way of like kind of splitting the class up. And I think the reason that they do that is to kind of, they don't really have any control over what we would do otherwise. Like that's kind of the only like distinguishing factor between us. And so for my project, I looked a lot at like the environmental conditions present at the site, the environmental justice issues that like are currently present, and like how a development on the site would impact the environmental conditions and then impact the surrounding communities. And so it was like a very kind of niche way of looking at the site that we were given.
And the capstone course is broken up into the first half being dedicated to an individual report that you're required to write 15 pages. And that's based on your concentration, and you have concentration specific questions that you have to answer. And then the second half of the course is a 25 page report, I believe. But this one is a group project. And this is where they match up every single concentration and they create one group. And then they have to again reassess the site, and then they have to propose a new development project on that site as a group now. And so this is just kind of, you know, taking all the comments you received from your initial report individually, and then kind of fleshing all of the information out, and then coming up with a new concept as a group with your other cohort mates who are in different concentrations. And so it's a very interesting process. And Sam and I are just going to kind of break down what we did for our individual reports. And we're also going to discuss what the particular project was asking from us. So Sam, I don't know if you want to just go into like what the project was about.
Yeah. And I think it was interesting because there's four sections of our capstone that meets at four different times throughout the week with four different professors. And with that, obviously, like there's like different challenges, but I think that our section in particular is pretty lucky because we do have a pretty even split of all the different concentrations. Whereas like, I know that in the environmental concentration, there's a lot of students from that in one section. And so I'm curious how like the groups are going to be broken down when it's like, there's a lot of one concentration and like none of another. And so it's like, if there's no, you know, design of the built environment concentration in one class, then it's like, I don't know how like they're going to necessarily deal with like one group just not necessarily having a strong design element, unless there's like someone who can fill that gap.
Right. I agree. And I think it's I think it's been a challenge because this is one of the largest cohorts. I think our cohort has been one of the largest. So I don't think they were prepared for how many students were actually going to be registering for this class. And so, the sections are a bit wonky, but I am curious to see how that's going to pan out. And I think maybe if anything, they'll probably just have different expectations based on what the capabilities are of, you know, each student, each group. But it's going to be interesting to kind of see that play out.
Yeah. So for our capstone, basically how it works is at the beginning, they like the professors slash the faculty will present like a site to us, and they'll say like, they'll give us some background about the site, kind of very little. Like they gave us a feasibility report to kind of look through, and that was kind of it. They had the client also come, but we were unable to go because it was during one of our other classes. But our site is the Taylor Yard G2 parcel, which is in Glassell Park, Cypress Park area of Los Angeles, and it's along the LA River, which poses its own challenges. And basically the premise of the individual report is each person, no matter your concentration, is kind of like proposing a project that would hypothetically go on the site. And then, like I said, you kind of look at it from the lens of your concentration. So for mine, it was like the environmental conditions of the site, any remediation efforts, kind of the environmental impacts of the development, and then like all the justice concerns kind of wrapped into that. Whereas like someone in housing would have to evaluate like the feasibility of housing and how many units you would put on the site. And I think like your concentration specifically is pretty siloed into like for me, I could have put anything and I just have to talk about the environmental conditions. Whereas like you being in housing, like you kind of had to put housing. Like they didn't really give you an option to not put housing, even if you don't think housing should necessarily go on the site.
Correct. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think a challenge with a capstone like this, especially with the vast amount of concentrations, poses a challenge because, for instance, there was like a lot of assumptions that certain concentrations had to make. For instance, the Taylor Yard G2 parcel is not remediated yet and has soil contamination because it was a former rail yard. But for my concentration, we were asked to not acknowledge that it was contaminated. We were supposed to assume that the soil had already been remediated. And I believe that was for every single concentration besides environment, because environment had to go into the details of how they would plan to remediate the soil and what those mitigation efforts would be. And so for me, it kind of posed this internal challenge, because the project itself is already moving forward by the city of Los Angeles to become entirely a public park, 42-acre public park for the residents of Cypress and Glassell Park and the surrounding communities. And putting housing on the site, through my analysis, didn't seem to be the most feasible option, and maybe wouldn't, you know, go over well with the community, but at the same time, it was a requirement. And so I was trying to find a way to put housing on the site without it being, you know, overwhelming or, you know, just kind of over consuming the site. I wanted to make it where, you know, I was still meeting the needs of the residents or the desires of the residents to have public open space, but also kind of addressing the fact that, yes, like, we are in a housing crisis. And so when there is available land, especially land that's so large, 42 acres is huge, that, you know, housing maybe should go on the site, but there are other conditions that you kind of have to acknowledge. And so it was definitely a really challenging project for me. But all in all, it was an interesting experience. I definitely found myself getting frustrated just kind of going through the process, but I was just so happy when I completed the 15-page report and I was like, I'm done. Like,
yeah,
it's over for now. So I'm curious to see, you know, what comments I'll be getting back on the project. That's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. I think, so I think that, like, as a general overview, like, I don't know, that the project was purposefully very vague to give us a lot of opportunity to kind of explore different options.
Yeah.
We did, like Natalie said, have specific concentration questions that each person was to answer through their report. So, like, being in the environmental space, like, you know, that it asks, like, what are the existing conditions, and like, what, how might the proposed development, like, you know, remediate or, you know, impact the environment. And they were vague, but kind of guiding questions.
Yeah.
And I think it was really interesting, kind of, at least when I was talking to other environmental folks, like, even like through those questions, like how different some of our responses were.
Yeah.
And how like we brought in like very different aspects. Like, some people brought in CEQA, which is like the California Environmental Quality Act, whereas others like went in a whole other direction of how they were addressing like the environmental conditions and the proposed development. And so I think like what the capstone is at its heart is supposed to be a reflection of what we learned in the program.
Yeah.
And so I think that the different elements that are brought in are really a reflection of, like, if you didn't take a course in CEQA, you're not necessarily expected to like bring that into the analysis. Whereas like I did take a course that's all about CEQA. And so of course I'm like, I'm thinking, okay, like how is this going to like go over in terms of like the environmental impacts that are in CEQA and like a negative declaration versus an EIR. And so I don't know, I feel like it being broad was helpful, but I do think that a little bit of more direction would have been nice, just because I feel like if you're doing a development in a workplace or like in a professional setting, like there are usually pretty strict requirements of what you need to cover, like especially in an RFP.
Right, exactly. And so that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because for me, basically the approach that I took was as if this was an RFP response. And so I responded with a lot of elements that were, you know, like basically I made the assumption that I was the developer and that I was making a proposal to the city of what I would put on that parcel if given the opportunity. And it was interesting because then during our presentations, and so again, another component of the capstone is you're writing the report, but you also have to present it.
Right.
And one of the questions that I received was like, how are you, who is going to be like managing the property and who's going to be overseeing, you know, the development of this. And it again, like, became a challenge because the project was really vague. So I didn't know how in detail I needed to go about, you know, certain elements. So for me, that question was a bit perplexing because I hadn't really thought that far into it as like making the legitimate assumption that like, I'm a developer and I'm partnering. Right. So I did, of course, just tell them like during the presentation that it would be a joint partnership, which is most likely the most feasible option with such a large site. But in my actual individual report, I never addressed that. So like then a part of me was like, okay, am I going to get like dinged for not including that? But again, like it was very vague. It offered a lot of, you know, fluidity in what you chose to include and incorporate versus what you chose to leave out. And I think that was the most stressful part for me because a lot of it was like, am I putting enough or am I addressing everything I need to? And so that was a bit overwhelming at times, but definitely all in all, I feel like, you know, I turned out a good project. They had for the housing and real estate development concentration, they made us do a pro forma, and I am skilled in pro forma analysis. So I felt really good doing that. And that was pretty easy for me. So that was like one element that I was happy with. But then the kind of financial explanations became a little bit more complicated because you're, you know, needing to pull in so many different funding sources because again, like 42 acres that you're developing all of it. It's real, like, that's such an expensive project. I think my like project total was almost $400 million. So it definitely, you know, had to pull some public funding sources and yeah, it was a crazy, crazy experience, but I'm really glad that, you know, I'm glad we did it. I think it definitely teaches you patience and it also kind of, I think it really challenges you to look at things from many different perspectives, because again, you are making so many assumptions. So it's like, should I put this in or should I not? And then you kind of were figuring out like, okay, so I have 15 pages. I need to put the most important information. So I think that was, you know, just a skill that I acquired, I think, in this project. So that was good. And yeah, my concentration questions were different from Sam's. I had some that, you know, I needed to acknowledge how I would allow this parcel to be connected to the surrounding community so that it wasn't just like its own isolated, you know, residential and commercial / open space area. And so there were some different elements about, you know, dealing with market factors and acknowledging vacancy rates of units. And so was this project actually feasible if I were to put housing on it? And so that was very interesting to kind of learn more about the community as well. So yeah, it was all in all, it was a very interesting experience.
Yeah. I feel like going over some of the like challenges of the site in particular would be helpful to kind of give some context. So like Natalie said, the site is a former rail yard, which I guess like to most concentrations didn't matter, but like it's still important to acknowledge because like there are some very severe like contamination issues in the soil. And so for me, I was like very cognizant of that, obviously. And I think one of my challenges was I don't know anything about soil remediation. I am not like a geo person, like that's not really my purview. I didn't learn about that. And so there is I would say, depending on your concentration, there is like there could be a significant amount of things that you kind of have to learn while doing it. So like me reading the feasibility report and looking at, oh, they're proposing all of these methods of soil remediation that I have never heard of. And I kind of have to figure out which one I'm going to propose on which parts of the site.
Right.
That was a huge struggle for me. Yeah. There was an easement on the site, which basically means that the city sold a part of, I don't know how it works still, honestly.
Basically, it's a memorandum of understanding in which the city partners with the MRCA, which is the Mountains and Recreation
Conservation Authority.
Yeah. And so the MRCA basically receives a 12.5 acre piece of the parcel, and that parcel becomes the responsibility of MRCA to remediate the soil, to put in the, because they do habitat conservation. So mm-hmm. They have to then develop the site with the habitat conservation elements, which are, you know, the different types of plant life and things like that, that they deem should go on the parcel. And then they have to oversee and basically run the, that 12.5 acre parcel. And so it basically, I don't think they sold it. I think it was just a partnership, and the, then the MRCA just becomes responsible for all of the elements of those 12.5 acres.
Yeah. And we were not following that. We basically assumed that we were, well, we didn't assume, we were told that we were responsible for developing the whole 42 acres. And so a lot of people did choose to kind of put that, put those 12.5 acres aside and say, you know, this will be conservation, and like there'll be limited, you know, like recreational uses, it will be mostly for that. And so that was kind of interesting, having that conversation with like the professor and just asking those kinds of questions. There's a lot of gentrification concerns because, you know, putting in a 42 acre park in an area that, you know, is like rent burdened and is lower income, you know, there are these questions of like, well, is green gentrification going to happen? And looking at the community engagement that has already been done through the 100 acre partnership, which is like a big Taylor Yard partnership, like there was a lot of requests for green space. But it wasn't necessarily clear to us if like the kind of surveys that the residents were receiving was like, okay, out of these elements of green space, what are most important to you? Or if they were given the option, would you like housing? Would you just like open space? Would you like commercial uses? And so I think like the limited interaction that we had with the people who were on the ground doing the actual community engagement was a little bit like, I would have thought that we would have had more conversation with that because, you know, ultimately, you know, in my project, I did decide to put some housing and it wasn't a lot, but I was just like, we don't have like tenant protections in place to ensure that people in the surrounding areas won't get priced out of their homes or won't be forced to move out. And so having an allocation of affordable housing on the site at least provides more housing in the area. But it was just like a really, there were a lot of things left up in the air that we kind of just had to roll with.
Yeah, it was, that was definitely, I think, a huge challenge. And then for me in particular, my biggest challenge was that in this program for housing and real estate development, we more so look at things from an urban planning perspective and not from an actual development perspective. And so I think one of the biggest challenges was the fact that because the project site is adjacent to the LA River, there is significant flood risk. Although, like, I find it kind of interesting because they say like this, you know, there's severe flood risk or significant flood risk. And then I'm looking at it and it says like each year you assume about 1% flood risk. So not entirely sure how severe that is, but obviously you do have to include elements of flood risk mitigation. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was the fact that I've never worked on a housing development project or learned about a housing development project that was in a flood risk area. Mm-hmm. And so I know there are different kinds of developmental considerations that you have to look into. And one of them could be that you put the housing on an elevation. So you basically put the housing not on a podium necessarily, but you have to elevate it a certain, you know, distance off the ground in case of flooding so that there isn't damage. But because I did ground floor commercial space on my project, I was trying to figure out, you know, how would I elevate that and still allow for people to, you know, reach this ground floor commercial. And there's like different ways that you can approach this. I ended up using a landscape buffer. So I put the housing as far back from the river as possible. And I used landscaping as a buffer and flood mitigation for any flood risk that came from the river. And so, and there were some other elements that I addressed as well, but it was very interesting just because this project site in particular did have a lot of challenges and a lot of different concerns, and it felt like you almost couldn't address every single one.
No, absolutely not. In 15 pages, not to mention that the site is zoned manufacturing and public facilities. And so there's that hurdle of like, well, if you're doing anything but green space and open space, like you're going to have to address in real life.
Yeah.
You would have to change the zoning. Right. Of course, in our scenario, they're like, well, we can make exceptions and you can just talk about the process of how that would happen. Luckily, I, again, like there was, you know, different considerations for different concentrations. I didn't have to talk about changing my zoning because I'm not a housing, I guess. I don't know. There were kind of weird things that they let slide for different concentrations.
Yeah.
You had to.
Yeah. So the acknowledgement for rezoning in real life, this is a very, very significant process. It typically takes on average a year, if not more. You have to do hearings. You have to do a general plan amendment. And although this, because obviously the city understands the housing crisis that we're currently in. Again, I really don't like using that word, but the city acknowledges we have a severe housing shortage. Mm-hmm. And so they are essentially, you know, if there is precedent to rezone a parcel and you can really say that the rezone is going to lead to, you know, significant benefits for the existing community, yes, a zone change can occur. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you know, when I was addressing rezoning, I basically said, this is a year-long process. We're going to have to do, you know, XYZ applications. We'll have to meet with, you know, XYZ county commission. And there's like different kinds of councils that you have to meet with and then get approval. And then you get your permitting. And then I basically just laid out what the process would look like. And then I said, so now we'll be assuming a commercial zone. And the commercial zone allows for adjacent, you can do, I think it was R4 resident, no. R3 residential. So that give, you know, there are height limits. There's mm-hmm. all these different kinds of restrictions and things like that included in the zoning. So I did like a full zoning analysis and that's kind of how I approached that question. But that definitely, I mean, again, with the constraints that are on the site, mm-hmm. I understand why the proposal is to just make it a park, but I also understand many of the professors that we spoke with that sat on our faculty boards when they were reviewing this project were very much so advocating for housing because obviously it is a need. And when you do have a 42-acre site, putting housing, you know, does seem like a very good option. On this site in particular, I don't know if that would actually really come to fruition, but it was interesting, you know, no matter what, that I just kind of was working through all these different problems, and I ended up, I think, putting about 530 units, and I did affordable, I did senior housing, and then I did market rate housing. And also another thing with gentrification is it's kind of interesting when we talk about gentrification, because gentrification itself may not necessarily be a horrible thing unless it leads to the displacement of existing community members. And there's a lot of research that kind of goes into the different kinds of gentrification that happens. And it's ongoing research, and the kind of concept and theories of gentrification are really interesting to learn about. So trying to navigate how you're going to put that housing on the parcel without displacing the existing mm-hmm. community who, like Sam said, is living in poverty and is low income and is in a predominantly, like, this site is very isolated from the existing community. Mm-hmm. So trying to figure out how to make sure that they're included in the process and mm-hmm. that they're also able to access the site was a really interesting process as well. So I learned a lot, and I'm just very interested ongoing to just kind of see like what really comes of this site mm-hmm. at the end.
Yeah. And I think it is interesting that they gave us that the site we were given has the Bureau of Engineering is like the group entity that is kind of overseeing the development of the site.
Right.
And there are three proposed designs that they are currently considering, all of which are green space. And I do think like it is a little bit interesting that they gave us a site that already has proposed projects. Like, it kind of makes me feel like, you know, if it doesn't really make sense, like, and realistically, they kind of already know what they're doing with the site. And like us going back and now doing this analysis is like, why?
Yeah.
And like you said, fitting every consideration into 15 pages is just, especially when you need a site plan and that's a page.
Yeah.
You need to answer these questions. That's supposed to be the majority, but there are all these other considerations, like the California high-speed rail is planned to be right there, right past this. And so like that could become like, you know, 50 years from now, or maybe even sooner. Like that is a consideration that is going to have to happen. And so it's just like interesting how I'm just curious how the conversation is going to go after the fact, after we kind of have debriefed with our professor of, you know, here's the things that overall went well, and here's the things where you could have improved. Because I know I did not get as technical as I could have, simply because, one, it is not a reflection of what I learned in the program. Like, I did not learn in-depth flood mitigation strategies, which I did research, but I, like, kind of tried to talk about, I kind of tried to allocate my pages so that I would have like one page per thing.
Right.
And so at some point there wasn't enough space to go in depth. And I know that that might not go over as well with the faculty because I wasn't as technical as I could have been.
Right.
And so it's really, I think, you know, we still have not received like a grade or had, we're on spring break. And so we haven't kind of talked about the process with our professor yet, but there's definitely a lot that of questions that I still have, even after having done the assignment.
Yeah, I agree. And also, like, just your mentioning of the high-speed rail, you know, it's interesting because with the introduction of the high-speed rail and the fact that LA Metro is also considering putting a transit village adjacent to the site.
Yeah.
It is a possibility that maybe it would be a better idea to put housing and commercial space, because then you have patrons who are coming from the rail station onto the site. And this could be opportunity for, you know, individuals to engage with not only open space, but also commercial space. And that could be economic revitalization for the existing community. But then again, there's the, you know, question of, could this gentrify the entire neighborhood? And looking at those different elements is so interesting to me. So I feel that obviously the city, through their analysis, decided to move forward with the park because of all of these different considerations.
Yeah.
And I do, you know, I can definitely see that there could be cause to question, like, hey, why aren't we putting more on the site? Like, I can understand that. So I think maybe that's why they wanted us to address the site in some capacity. But it definitely, as Sam said, it was interesting only because typically what I've seen with capstone projects is you take on the client and then you essentially propose something in which they have no plans for the site yet. And in this case, it was actually that the plans are already moving forward and they've already approved a site plan. And now we're just kind of going back. And I think utilizing the site, maybe because of its size and maybe because it did have a diverse amount of different considerations. So maybe it was easier for every concentration to be able to address, you know, their element. But yeah, all in all, a very interesting project. And I am looking forward to Tuesday when we can talk more about like the individual report.
Yeah, I still feel like so unsure of what I ended up turning in, if I'm being completely honest. Like, I think it's good, but I'm like, the faculty could go either way, really.
And that's honestly, that's exactly how I felt. Was I even remember Sam said this, and I thought the same thing when I turned mine in. I was like, you know what? It looks beautiful. Like, everything on the, it looks very well put together.
Yeah.
The content is solid, but at the same time, I was very much so questioning, like, is this what they were looking for?
Yeah.
Because, you know, with the kind of vague instructions, you really don't know. And so I am very curious to see how it goes over with the different faculty and with our professor and all of that. So I'm curious to get our grade and get the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if like each professor is going to provide feedback or if it's
just our professor will provide feedback on ours, which is also interesting because a lot of the professors I know at least two of the professors of the four this year have never taught this capstone before.
Right. Yes.
And I do feel like they were kind of thrown in with not as much maybe context on what we would be doing and what we have learned in the program as they could have had.
And then I also think too, like our professor comes from an architectural background, I believe. And then also his capstone experience was very different. Like he went to
the comprehensive exam.
Yeah. But they did the comp exam and that was like, you did this all in 1 week.
Yeah.
And that was it. So it wasn't like an entire semester's project. So I definitely think like Sam said, they just kind of came in and there was this completely new, you know, project that they had to walk us through. And yeah, they just maybe weren't given as much
Information as they could have. From what he said, they didn't ask questions because they literally did not have time.
Right.
And so we have 16 weeks of this class or whatever. Yeah. And the first half, we're doing our own report. We have plenty of time to think of questions.
Right.
And so when we're like, so what do we assume about the zoning? What do we assume about this? What do we assume about that? I think he was kind of thrown because he was like, when I did this, we got the site, everyone ran there, like did a quick site visit, and then we sat down and we didn't leave our rooms for a week and we finished the comprehensive exam.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, would you have rather had a comp exam?
Yeah. If I'm being quite honest, I said this almost this entire first half of the semester, I said I would rather have taken off a week of work and just cried in my room for a solid week trying to pan this out rather than doing 16 weeks worth of a capstone, because I'm telling you, I feel that I do so much better under pressure like that. Just like churning out a full, you know, where I think I definitely would have preferred a 1 week comp exam versus 16 weeks of capstone. Yeah.
Yeah. And we had some guest lecturers and one of them said, you know, in the real world, you do have these kind of short timeline projects.
Yeah.
And the comp exam was a good kind of look at, oh, you have, you know, there's this proposal, we have a week.
Yeah.
We have to get it done. Like it is kind of a good representation of like what working under pressure for like a client can feel like.
Exactly.
And so I do think that they're like, obviously it is nice to be able to ask questions, to have, you know, time to really absorb the materials, get to know the site, get to know the community.
Yeah.
And so I do think that there are a lot of pros to this style, but I think that for our like 1 week of pain is like, it might have been a little bit nicer than 16 weeks of capstone.
Yeah, just thinking about it, like, I don't know, it's kind of that like question, would you just rather be sad for one day or sad for like a whole month? I mean, yeah, you choose one day. I'm just kind of like, yeah, give me a really difficult challenge for an entire week that, you know, I can just knock out and then I don't have to think about it anymore. Versus like, I also think too, we worked on the first report for 8 weeks. And then now we've taken a 1 week break because of spring break. And I was honestly in the mindset of like, I have already graduated and I'm done. And then it's kind of the realization that, oh no, we have all of these other, and not only are Sam and I working on capstone, this isn't the only class we're taking. We're also taking two other classes. And in those classes, we also have group projects. So we have a group project for our urban and international development class. And then we have a group project for our urban design class. And so we're juggling a lot. And that's where I also think the 1 week of, you know, hell would have been a lot better, because then at least there's a little bit more balance, you know, kind of juggling the rest of the classes that we're taking.
Yeah.
But
when my cap and gown came out, I was like, okay, so I'm done.
Yeah.
No, we have a whole other half of the semester, but
yes,
we will be done so soon.
Yes, we will. Honestly, time flies. So I can't even believe we're about to graduate. Like, I just, because when did we start this podcast? Almost, 8 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just crazy to think about. We've been doing this for, 8 months now. That means 8 months has just gone by in a flash. I just feel like everything's happening really quickly. So it's exciting times.
Yeah. Do you have any parting thoughts?
Parting thoughts for the listeners. I am definitely, yes, here is a parting thought and also a parting question. So my parting thought is that, this may sound really overwhelming, but I definitely can say that in the grand scheme of things, you will come out with a lot of gains from experiences like this, no matter how challenging or frustrating they may be. And so I think it's just kind of embracing everything as it comes and really just making sure that you're focusing on, one foot in front of the other. I think that's the most important thing when you're feeling a lot of pressure or you're feeling overwhelmed. And that kind of got me through a lot. And then my parting question is that if anybody's currently enrolled in an urban planning program, do you feel like you had a similar experience with your capstone project or your thesis? Or if you were in an urban planning program or currently are in one is what I'm saying, but did you have a similar experience? Did you have a different kind of project? Like, I feel like I'm curious if people want to reach out and tell us like what your capstone experience was like, that would be interesting.
Maybe we should post that question on the Instagram.
Yes, ma'am. I would love
to the followers, because I think we definitely have followers that are not listeners, which I think is funny.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, why do you follow us if you're not going to listen?
They're like, I'm here for the memes.
Literally. That's true.
Yeah. Okay. What are your parting thoughts, Miss A?
Well, I was just going to say, there was definitely points of this process where I was I felt so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And most of the source of the stress was like the unknowns.
Yeah.
And the page limit.
Yeah.
Because it is hard to condense like a 42 acre site with all of these constraints, all of these community considerations into 15 pages.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're discussing like justice. Because one of my questions was specifically about the environmental justice considerations. Right. It was a lot,
yeah.
But it will get done. And at the end of the day, I think it's just important to think about like, what are the most important considerations of the site and just really focus and hone in on those. Because if you spread yourself too thin, it's just going to end up being, I think, a little too surface level. And I think that's maybe where I might have been a little rocky, because I was so overwhelmed with everything that I was like, I need to talk about so many things.
Right.
And I think it's important to just sit down, like after you've done initial research, and think, okay, what is the most important considerations that we really should be talking about with the site? And then if you're not good at making site plans, that's okay, because we aren't either. And it just, it gets done. Like, just do it in PowerPoint. It really doesn't matter that much. Literally. If you're not a design concentration in your program and they ask you to make a site plan,
do your best.
Do your best.
Do your best.
It's hard.
Yeah. Because I did mine in Canva, and the people that I put on my site plan to like acknowledge somebody walking on the path, they were bigger than my actual building, which is,
I was going to say, they would have been like a 5 acre person.
Literally. So I was like, okay, so these people are apparently 45 feet tall, because they're definitely not scale. So, just do your best and work with kind of the resources that you have and
work to your strengths. That's what our professor kept telling us. Work to your strengths. If your strength is not design, don't sweat it.
Yeah.
Try your best.
Yep.
Work on your writing or your analysis or whatever you feel are your strengths.
Yes.
Because in the real world, if your strength is not design, that's not going to be your job.
Yeah.
Or if you want to learn it, like, go for it.
Yeah.
More power to you.
Right.
My job is not going to be soil remediation. Mm-hmm. Hence, I did not stress about not being so technical, because at the end of the day, it's not what I learned and it's not what I want to do.
Right.
I think it's important to have a basic understanding.
Yeah.
I don't think it's important to know, oh, well, in this case where there's this, we need to do this method of and go this deep into the soil and excavate right. this much of it.
Right.
And I think just don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I second Sam's thought.
And so thanks for listening.
The best luck. The best of luck.
Thank you so much for listening. We really hope that you enjoyed this episode of Urban Planning is Not Boring. If you did, please remember to send us to your friends and follow us wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember, guys, urban planning is not boring.
No, it is not.